Perhaps the most interesting case of negative bias occurred in technology stocks. After the stock market debacle of 1974, investors were leery of any company that needed to raise equity capital from outside sources. Distributed data processing was in the early stages of its development. New companies like Datapoint and Fourphase were in the vanguard, with IBM lagging badly. The market was practically exploding, but these little companies were hamstrung by their inability to raise capital. The stocks were selling at very low multiples of anticipated earnings, and the main argument against them was that they would not be able to grow fast enough to meet the demand, and eventually IBM would move into the market. The argument turned out to be valid, but not before these companies became large and prosperous and investors became eager to throw money at them at high multiples. Those who had been willing to fight the negative bias were amply rewarded. As the various niches occupied by these small companies converged to form a large market, most of them were absorbed by larger companies, and those that stayed independent fell on evil days. Datapoint is currently looking for a home at a much reduced multiple. Fourphase was recently acquired by Motorola, which proceeded to lose its shirt on it. If the initial market reaction to distributed data processing companies had been more positive, it is possible that some of the early starters might have grown fast enough to survive, just as the earlier wave of microcomputer manufacturers did spawn a few enduring companies like Digital Equipment and Data General. The negative bias of the 1975 to 1976 period gave way to the opposite extreme. It found expression in a venture capital boom that culminated in the second quarter of 1983. The sequence of events is not as clear-cut as in the case of REITs, but that is only because high technology is not as homogeneous an industry. The same reflexive interaction between stock prices, prevailing bias, and fundamentals can be observed, but much more specific knowledge is required to trace the course of events. The availability of venture capital on attractive terms led to a proliferation of new ventures. Every new company needed equipment as well as inventory, so that electronic equipment manufacturers enjoyed a boom, and so did the manufacturers of products and components. The electronics industry is a large customer of its own products, so that the boom was self-reinforcing. But the proliferation of companies intensified competition. Industry leaders lost their market position as a new generation of products was introduced because the individuals who were responsible for developing them left their companies and set up new ones. Instead of companies growing in step with their industry, the industry grew by the multiplication of companies. Investors failed to recognize this trend. As a result, technology stocks in general and new issues in particular became substantially overvalued. The new issue boom culminated in the second quarter of 1983. When prices started to decline, fewer issues could be sold, and eventually venture capitalists became less venturesome. As fewer companies were formed and the existing ones depleted their cash, the market for technology products softened. Competition intensified and profit margins deteriorated. The process started to feed on itself, and the low point has probably still not been reached. The venture capital boom was not the only cause of the subsequent shakeout. The strong dollar and the rise of Japanese competition were at least as important. But it is clear that stock prices had an impact on the fundamentals in both directions. What distinguishes the conglomerate and REIT sequences from the venture capital boom is that in the first two cases, the underlying trend itself was based on the exploitation of the investor's bias, while in the third, it was not. In the case of conglomerates, the idea was to acquire other companies with inflated paper. In the case of REITs, the idea was equity leveraging. The idea behind the latest generation of technology products had nothing to do with the stock market. To understand the ups and downs of technology stocks, we must know something about the underlying trends in technology. In the case of conglomerates and REITs, we need to know little else than the theory of reflexivity. It is important to realize, however, that knowing everything about underlying trends in technology is not sufficient to explain the ups and downs of technology stocks. The reflexive interaction between underlying trends, prevailing biases, and stock prices also needs to be understood. Combining the two kinds of understanding is extremely difficult. Those who want to be familiar with technology must follow the industry closely and continuously. Those who want to exploit the divergence between perception and reality must move from group to group. Most technology experts are ignorant of reflexivity and tend to remain fully invested at all times. Their popularity and influence wax and wane in a reflexive fashion. After the recent decline in technology stocks, a new breed of analysts seems to be emerging who are overly sensitive to the importance of investors' perceptions. After a decent interval, it may be once again profitable to go against the prevailing bias and invest in technology stocks on the basis of fundamental trends. I have always had a lot of difficulty investing in technology stocks because of the specialized knowledge required. Finally, I managed to gain a good insight into the computer industry during the 1975 to 1976 period and profited from the prevailing negative bias. I held on to my positions for a few years, but then I sold them and lost my grip on the industry. In 1981, I made the mistake of not participating in a venture capital fund operated by one of the most successful venture capitalists of the period, in the belief that the boom could not last long enough to allow investors to exit in time. In this, I was undoubtedly influenced by misgivings about the larger picture. In any event, his investors realized a good profit in 1983. By that time, I was totally out of touch with technology stocks, and the boom passed me by. Even the conglomerate and REIT sequences were not totally self-contained. Extraneous developments, such as the level of economic activity, regulation, or specific events, e.g. the attempted takeover of Chemical Bank, played a crucial role in the conglomerate boom. In less pure sequences, the importance of outside influences is even greater. We are currently in the midst of another self-reinforcing, self-defeating cycle that will go down in history as the merger mania of the 1980s. Instead of inflated paper, it is cash that serves as the currency. The scale of transactions already dwarfs the conglomerate boom. Merger mania is but an element of a much larger ongoing historical drama whose ramifications reach far beyond the stock market and involve politics, exchange rates, monetary and fiscal policies, quirks of taxation, international capital movements, and many other developments. I shall make an attempt at unraveling the ongoing historical drama, but that is not as simple as analyzing a more or less self-contained boom-bust sequence. The larger picture is full of reflexive interactions as well as non-reflexive fundamental trends. We need a more complex model that allows for the transition from one boom-bust sequence to another and for the coexistence of several reflexive processes at the same time. Before I embark on such an ambitious project, I want to examine another market that is characterized by vicious and benign circles, the currency market.